turn it over to you for item number 10, management objectives for salmon and steelhead.
Chair Smith and members of the commission, Director Unsworth. My name is Jim Scott. I am a special assistant in the director's office, and I'm pleased to be able to speak with you today about something near and dear to my heart, management objectives for salmon and steelhead. Now, I'm a little bit worried about this presentation because Commissioner Mankin asked if I dress for a funeral in my new black coat, and so I'm feeling a little nervous here at the table, but I hope things will go well.
Rest in peace.
So on the cover slide here, you see two books. One on the left is on the dynamics of exploited fish populations. I will say that that book ushered in modern fisheries management, published in 1957, the very famous Beverton and Holt monograph. I also like to say that ushered in modern fishery management because that's the year I was born, and I can say modern fisheries management started the year I was born. On the other side, you see a more recent book, and it's interesting just to look at the titles. The one on the left is Exploited. The one on the right says Fisheries Ecology. And that represents in part the large evolution we've had in fishery management over the last 15 years. And I want to quote from one of the reviewers of that book. Reviewer says, their merciless slaughtering of cherished sacred cows is supported by sound scholarship and cogent, well-reasoned arguments. It's a really good book, and I would encourage anyone from the policy level on down to the nuts and bolts of stock assessment to take a look at it. Even at the policy level, if you read the first two chapters, I think you'll gain a lot of knowledge and wisdom from it. So my small task today is to take you through 50 years from the ushering in of modern fisheries management to our modern-day practices. I'm going to start at the level of why would we even set management objectives. Why would we do that? Two, we're going to spend a little bit of time on spawner-recruit fundamentals. And then I've got eight key points to work through with you today. And much perhaps to your chagrin, I started out the morning with five key points. Tammy was good enough to give me a little bit extra time, and I now have eight. But they're good ones. So why set management objectives? Kind of a fundamental question, but I think it often gets lost as we're in the heat of the North of Falcon battle or other gear allocation questions. And it harkens back to a really famous debate in the fisheries world called the Thompson-Birkenrode debate. And it happened back in the 50s. And a scientist, Thompson, argued that the resurgence of the Pacific halibut was due to the management measures that the Pacific Halibut Commission had put in place. Birkenrode argued that was a bunch of hooey, that it had nothing to do with the management measures. It had everything to do with how the environment had changed in that interim period. So it's a very famous debate in the fisheries world. And if the resurgence was caused strictly by environment, and environment caused all of our fluctuations in salmon abundance, there would be really no reason to establish a management objective. It's all environmentally driven. Now, over the last 50 years since the Thompson-Birkenrode debate, I think it's fair to say that in the fisheries world, we now recognize that the environment is very variable It causes lots of changes in the abundance and productivity of our stocks, but it's essential to have management objectives that are grounded in sound science. And that's because these management objectives represent a societal decision to allocate a renewable resource between present and future use. So we can have it all now and not have anything for our kids, or we can have some now and a lot perhaps for our kids, or we could save it all for our kids. That's the societal decision that is at the foundation of our management objectives. And it's important to recognize that we're setting aside potential harvest now to ensure that we've got harvest or fish in the future. So once we've gotten over that first hurdle about do we really need a management objective? I think we do. Then the question is, well, what do we base that on? And in the fishery world, in the salmon and steelhead world, the stock recruit analysis, the spawner recruit analysis is really the fundamental paradigm that underlies almost everything we do. So I'm going to start with a really graphic illustration of how this works. On the far left there, we'll start with spawners at the top and recruits, or that's how many adults you get out of those spawners on the bottom. And on the far left, if we have zero spawners, unless there's spontaneous generation, we probably won't get any adults. So zero spawners, zero recruits. I think I can stand on that one. Now, if we move to the right, we put in, let's say, 2,000 spawners represented by those two fish. Then let's say it's a pretty productive stream. We get out 4,000 recruits. So for every two spawners in, four spawners out, or four recruits out, that's good. We're getting bang for our buck. We keep adding more fish. What happens? Though the more fish we have in that system, the less food there is, the less space there is, and so the fewer adults you get per spawner put in. So in this case, we're now up to 4,000 spawners, 6,000 recruits. We keep putting spawners in, and our relationship continues to get worse. We put in more and more spawners with a fewer and fewer adults produced per spawner in. And on the far right there, you see we put in 8,000 spawners and we only got out 9,000 adults. So our ratio, our return per investment, keeps declining as we move to the right there. Now, scientists being the bright folks that they are said, I bet we could put a line through that. We could develop a functional relationship there. And thus was born the famous spawner-recruit function. And Beverton and Holt is probably the most famous stock-recruit, spawner-recruit function that is used in the fisheries world. So let's take a look at this here. On the x-axis, we've got the numbers of spawners going from 0 to 12,000. On the y-axis going up is the number of recruits or adult fish produced. And again, you can see that relationship where initially for every adult spawner or every spawner you put in there, you get a lot of adults out. You move further to the right, you get fewer and fewer adults per spawner put in. Now, that kind of a key point is the one-to-one line. That's the red line in the middle there, and that's a line that represents if you have one spawner, you get one recruit, oddly enough. And the difference between the stock recruit function and that red line is what the sustainable catch is. So at, looks like I'm around 7,000 spawners there. At that level, it looks like I could get about 900 or so fish catch and still sustain the runs. time after time. So let's go to key point number one. I've got my stock, so I know I want to set a management objective. I know I've got an underlying relationship between the numbers of spawners I put in and the number of adults that come out and the allowable catch. Where on that line should I establish my management objective? And the long time thought now is that I should put it at the place where I can maximize my sustainable catch. And that's the point where you have the biggest distance between that one-to-one line in red and the stock recruit function in black. So in this case, it's at a spawner level of about 3,500 fish. At that spawner level, I get about 6,000 adults produced. So year after year, I can catch about 2,500 fish and maximize my sustainable level through time. Now, this is a pretty simple concept, and it is the standard in most of the salmon and steelhead world. So in the Pacific Salmon Treaty, the international treaty with Canada, MSY is the standard. In the Magnuson-Stevens Act for federal waters, MSY is the standard. And in U.S. v. Washington, MSY is a standard as well. So it's the starting point that almost all management objectives will start with. Key point number one. Now, key point number two is that if we begin to have fewer spawners than that MSY spawner level, it does not necessarily imply that we're putting that stock at extinction risk. Oftentimes, strangely enough, sometimes our management is imprecise and we get fewer spawners than the goal. And oftentimes I'll hear concern expressed that, oh, you've put the stock at risk of extinction. And in general, that probably isn't true as long as we're not too far below that MSY level. Now, it's going to be very stock-specific, very species-specific about how far you can drop before you get into danger. But just to give you a kind of a really rough idea, kind of a rule of thumb that you could think about. In the Magnuson-Stevens Act, there's a provision that defines overfished. And that means it's a point where the stock is at danger of not being able to produce its MSY yield over time. And in our Pacific Council, that point is defined at 50% of the MSY spawners. So that's a danger area. We don't want to get down around that 50% spawner level of MSY. And that's point A there. Now, an even higher risk area that we don't want to go anywhere near is where the stock is at risk of extinction. And a rule of thumb here is that that's about 5% of the unfished population abundance. And unfished is the point where the black line and the red line cross. So that's where you'd be if there's no fishing. You don't want to go below that level B. You don't want to even be close to it to put that stock at risk of extinction. So key point number two is dropping a bit below that MSY spawner level's okay. Don't drop too far below it, though, because first you'll begin to take away your yield of the future, and worst case is you begin to put that stock at risk. Okay, a third thing that I sometimes get confused about is I'll hear, well, let's fill the habitat to capacity. And I'm not always sure exactly what that means, but if it means we're going to continue to put spawners into the river until we're way to the right on that spawner recruit function, then that's probably not something we want to do. And the reason, again, is that as you put more and more spawners in, the benefits you get in terms of adults decline. So you get that productivity declines as you put more and more spawners in. And in the worst case, you go way to the right, you can actually put more spawners in than you'll get adults produce. So you get zero harvestable fish. So if that's, you know, what folks mean by fill the habitat to capacity, typically not what we're going to want to do in most fishery management. So the 50 years of modern management, there's been a lot of evolution in thinking about what all this means. Obviously started off with a very, very simplistic idea. And as we always find out, things aren't as simple as we would like them to be. And economists were probably the first ones to jump on the boat and say, well, this is stupid. You're looking at numbers of catch. We ought to be thinking about economics. What's the economic benefits to the commercial fishery? What's the economic benefits to the recreational fishery? And it turns out that MSY may or may not be the best number of spawners to have from an economic perspective. They also pointed out that this strict adherence to management for a single spawner goal can really put you in a boom-bust cycle. So 1 year, you could have a lot of fisheries, and the next year, if you're below the goal, you'd have no fishery. And obviously, that has a lot of tough economic consequences for commercial and recreational fishers. So the evolution of that thought was, well, rather than managing for a single spawner number, let's manage for a harvest rate that will give us close to that yield over the long term. And the there's a lot, we're going to come across a number of benefits of a harvest rate approach here as we go through the slides, but one of the biggest ones is it tends to stabilize your fishery. So you're not on and off and on. You can have a relatively even fishery year after year. So, for example, you might apply a 35% harvest rate year after year. And again, an evolution was that it was good the climate change was right before me, the environment is changing. And we can't predict exactly what it's going to look like in the future. But in order to have fish populations that have the ability to maintain themselves or thrive in that future environment, it's important to have both life history diversity and genetic diversity. And so it's not only the numbers of fish that are spawning, it's the diversity of the fish that are spawning. So we've included diversity more frequently in our management objectives and spatial structure. And spatial structure, the idea is that you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket or one part of the river. You want them spread out in case what if something happens to one part of the river so that it can't produce fish anymore. So think about your spatial structure, the spreading of the fish throughout the river. So our evolution, moved beyond just the numbers of spawners to include diversity and spatial structure. Environmental variability. Turns out every year is different. Every year seems worse now as I get older. And the other thing is, although I can count fish perfectly when I'm out counting fish on spawners in the stream, turns out that when somebody follows me, they get a different count, and I'm sure they're wrong, but it turns out that it's really hard to do accurate counts of spawners. What that means is that that variability in your spawner estimates, that we call it measurement error, introduces a bias into your estimated stock-recruit relationship. And this is just a simple example here. So the S in black, that MSY, that's the true spawner level associated with MSY. You saw that on the previous chart. And what I did is to this base data, I just added a little bit of measurement error, put in 10 points, and estimated stupidly, like I would, well, what's the stock-recruit relationship look like under that circumstance? And the result is that the MSY level estimated from that data set is about 2,000 fish, or a good third below the true value. And this isn't just with this data set. It's a bias that's inherent when you have measurement error in your spawners. So fortunately, there's smarter ways to do it than I did it. So that you can apply smarter analytical methods, but it's also important to incorporate uncertainty in the management. We rarely know as much as we think we know. I think that's been my experience I've learned, for better or worse, over 30 years. We really overestimate what we think we know. And again, consider harvest rate management. Harvest rate management is less sensitive to the stock assessment errors that are typical. Key point number five. So here's our nice historical relationship. Nice, productive system, a lot of habitat, cool, clean water, nice riparian zone. All the fish are happy. What happens when we get something like, choose your favorite river, the Green River, maybe? Well, what do we think happens to that stock recruit relationship? Dave? It drops. So what happens is there's less capacity. The system can hold fewer fish. And there's lower productivity. The number of adults you get per spawner are much less than in the good habitat. And what you see here is not at all unusual for what we have for many of the stocks now in Washington. So I think this one is roughly 25% or so of the historic condition. It's not unusual at all in Washington for our listed species to have abundances within, I don't know, 5 to 30% of the historical conditions. That's the situation we find ourselves in. And so I could estimate MSY for that degraded habitat. And you can see it's, I don't know, was that down around 700 fish. And so I could manage for 700 fish and I could maximize my sustainable yield. But that's something that... probably not the smart thing to do because we're right down there in our extinction area. And so as we have extensive habitat degradation, we move off of the maximizing the sustainable yield paradigm and into the risk management paradigm. And we're going to be looking at the demographic risk that any population faces. And those kind of two paradigms, catch versus extinction risk, are prevalent in our Washington management because we face both of those situations. Key point number six. Okay, so let's move on. Let's pretend you're all stock assessment biologists. I've asked you to estimate the MSY level for Washington coastal stocks. What do you do? Well, first, you get help from smart people because, again, you can really go off the deep end quickly if you don't recognize the problems that are inherent with messy data. So get some smart biometrics folks helping you. The gold standard for setting MSY levels is stock recruit analysis. And so the best case is you'll have 30 years of data. You'll have a range of spawners that is more than 10. So, example, maybe you have a range of spawners from 1,000 fish to 10,000. You want that big range so you get a good contrast. You want spawner information that's measured with very little error. That's, boy, you know, when we get a data set like that, it just brings tears to our eyes. So we have done stock recruit analysis for many stocks in Washington. I'm not sure we ever hit that gold standard, but one example, a recent example, is Grays Harbor Chinook, where we reexamined the MSY level 2 years ago now, I think it was. Another approach that's pretty common is just to look at the historical series of spawners. And it turns out if harvest rates are low, and that's the really big thing, is that this can give you a pretty good idea of the range that that MSY level might be in. Because if the harvest rates are low, the stock's mostly bouncing around in response to environmental variation, and it'll give you a pretty good idea about where that MSY level is. Not the gold standard by any means, but it'll give you a pretty good idea. And HOCO Chinook, our example, where we've got an average, a management objective based on the average number of spawners. Now, a third level down is you try and tie it to habitat somehow. So, for example, Puget Sound coho, we look at the number of smolts per square meter that we think are associated with maximum sustainable yield. We look at the number of square meters of rearing area in the river. We put all that together, and that gives our estimate of what the MSY spawning level would be. So I think these are in a hierarchical order. Gold standard stock recruit analysis, second level demographic analysis is good, and then the third level, the habitat analysis, a lot of assumptions there, and one that typically we'd want to reevaluate when we had stock recruit information available. So that's on the thrust towards trying to maximize sustainable yield. What about in the situation where we've had habitat degradation? Again, that's where we find ourselves pretty frequently. And in this case, again, it's demographic risk analysis. So we're looking at the probability that the population will persist with no fishing, and then looking at applying a small amount of fishing mortality and seeing how that affects the persistence of the population. And we want to keep that effect small. At Skagit Chinook would be an example of where we've done this persistence analysis. Another way, again, is to approach it from a historical average. So if there's a period of time where we're comfortable that the rate was low enough to ensure the persistence of the population or, in fact, promote recovery, then we could use a historical average. And that's the approach that was taken currently for Puget Sound steelhead, where we've got a 4% limit on mortality rates. Key point seven, then. It's important to routinely update the objectives. Again, things are changing. The environment's changing. There may be, on the good side, there may be restoration projects or barriers removed that open up additional habitat. But again, things change, and it's important to update your analysis to reflect that. So examples of recent work that we've done, stock recruit, we talked about Grays Harbor Chinook, Willapa Coho, again, same thing in 2015. The demographic risk analysis, we did the Lower Columbia Tules in 2011, and number of the Puget Sound Chinook stocks in 2000. But extremely important to revisit those management objectives and keep them consistent with current conditions. So the good news is, in fact, that we've got a lot of work currently underway looking at our management objectives. I'm not going to go through this whole list. I'm kind of a Chinook person myself, so I'm just going to do those. The Pacific Salmon Treaty, many of you are aware that we're in the midst of renegotiation of Chapter 3, the Chinook chapter. As part of that, we're taking a pretty close look at our management objectives and trying to fill in any of those where we don't currently have agreement with Canada and Alaska. So it's a priority area for us to focus on during these next 2 years. That's pretty closely linked to our Puget Sound Chinook, where we're pursuing a long-term resource management plan. Again, important to have updated analysis in that reflects our best understanding of the stocks. And then we also, of course, have policy direction from the commission where we're directed to take a look at our management objectives. And there's a number of examples in this table that point to that. Willapa Bay Chinook is one of those. 2020 is the date in our policy when we're going to come back to you with a revised look at Willapa Chinook. Okay, we're in the home stretch. I just want to go through those key points again. Again, MSY is the prevalent standard. It is the starting point for all discussions, but not the ending point. Two, just because we get a few less spawners than our MSY spawner goal, it doesn't put the stock at risk of extinction. You got to drop down a pretty good distance before you have stock extinction questions. You will, however, probably lose some yield in the next generation. The fill habitat to capacity, again, I'm not always sure exactly what that means, but if it's interpreted to mean you're pushing every possible spawner into the river and pushing yourself to the far right on that stock recruit function, probably not a place we generally want to be with our stock and salmon and steelhead management. The objectives are evolving. It's not just numbers of spawners anymore. It turns out that diversity is important, the types of spawners you have there. It's also important where they spawn. And we got to be thinking about economics as well. That's the real world that we operate in. And then as we move into the systems where there's a great deal of habitat degradation, likely listings of salmon or steelhead, then that MSY paradigm really doesn't make sense anymore. And we're moving to management objectives that reflect a risk analysis. This is tough stuff. You don't want to just go off, plop it into a spreadsheet, and come out with an answer. You want to give a lot more thought to it. Otherwise, you're going to go down a path that's going to lead you astray. I'll just guarantee it. Key point number seven. Recognize that the environment's not stationary. There's good things happening. There's bad things happening. We want to make sure that we're including whatever's happening in our management objectives so that we're managing our fisheries adequately. And then eight, again, a lot of work underway to address this kind of central topic to fisheries management. So thank you. I still have on my funeral suit. Hope you were usefully informed about 50 years of fishery management.
Thank you, Jim. Well done, my friend. Questions? Comments? Yes.
I don't know where to begin. Certainly informative. And, boy, I did not understand MSY, even though I had a general sense from college course in fisheries management, but this is complicated. And the reason that I put in the blue sheet to get this presentation is because when we were going through the Willapa policy development, we were looking at the key Chinook stocks on the coast and the trends in those key stocks. The measurement used to evaluate, you know, whether any of them were at risk, we're talking about wild stocks, were different. You know, you had the spreadsheet in which You had spawner goals, you had escapement goals, you had other things. So they were defined, the objectives were defined with different words. And I did not understand how we had come up with a system in which our conservation objectives were defined so differently. And I kind of wanted to understand, how did we come up with different objectives for different wild stocks? Because when we're talking about wild stocks, we're talking about avoiding ESA listing as one of our management objectives. And maybe there's others, but that's at the forefront of a lot of our thinking, is that if the wild stocks get too low, like they are in some places on the coast, because we failed to meet escapement year after year after year, and they've gotten perilously low in some places, then we got a big problem. And it's that extinction risk that you're talking about. So that's the reason I brought this up, is because during that policy development, we saw our conservation objectives defined with different words. And I didn't know how spawner goals related to escapement goals, whether those are the same, and if they are the same, why are we using different words? And then the whole business with NOAA proclaiming that Willapa wild Chinook are in the process of being overfished, but they are not overfished.
Right.
There's overfishing going on. And so I looked into that a little bit, and then I got all this talk about spawners and MSY, and it's got very confusing. So this is kind of helpful, but I can't digest all of this all at once, of course. But yeah. I get some of the major points you're making, which is that management goals are not necessarily the conservation goals that are associated with extinction risks. But and one of the reasons that I wanted to explore this is because I think a fundamental responsibility of the commission and the department is to avoid future listings. And if we don't know what our goals are, how well we're meeting those conservation goals, we have no idea if we're avoiding future listings. And to me, that's one of our major, that is maybe our highest priority. Because when the listings take place, the world changes for everybody that lives in that environment. So we don't want any future listings. And I just wanted to make sure we know what we're doing and we're updating our goals and understand where we are. And so I don't know if we've accomplished that during this, but it was helpful.
Good. Appreciate it. So I think a key message, and I probably didn't include it as one of my key points, is, again, it is essential to understand what this relationship is like for your particular population, where you're at in recent years relative to that MSY level and to those risk levels. So I think I'm kind of repeating back to you what I heard. And if you are a resource management agency, if you're managing salmon and steelhead that have relatively high rates of exploitation, which is typically where we find ourselves, there's a lot of people who want to catch them. Having this information, understanding where we're at, is critically important, first to trying to make sure we get as much catch out of our system as we can, and avoid driving ourselves down to that region around A or B. We don't want to be anywhere near those, as you said, Commissioner Wecker. ESA has some good things, but it also makes it really challenging to manage our fisheries, and it's expensive. We don't want to be there. From a policy perspective, or certainly from a stock perspective, we want healthy and harvestable stocks. So, again, this kind of the key point is we've got to have this information if our stocks are being heavily or even relatively heavily exploited, and most of them are.
Any other
questions?
Yeah.
Hypothetical, I guess. I'll pick a river. I'll pick the Skagit River, for example. Summer, fall, Chinook now, we're getting back 12,000 spawners. I'd like to go back in time. When I was a young person, I was told there was four or five times that much spawners. So back 300 years ago, for example, what happened if you had a river like that, and at what level did you have overspawning, and you you had 100,000 fish come back and you had overspawning? What was the risk reward of that? I mean, what happened biologically there with that?
Well, what would happen is that let's say this 10 here is a Skagit. Let's say this is 100,000 spawners here, and MSY at that time was 35,000. Actually, this works pretty good for your example. What would happen is that the run would be drifting back down a little bit because you put in more spawners than the system could handle, and so it's going to work its way back to the left. And if there's no fishing, it's going to be right on that intersection of the black and white, black and red lines. So that's its equilibrium point. Now, even then, there was probably a little bit of fishing. And so you're probably going to be somewhere on the upper half of that stock recruit function. Now, just to hit this one more time. So here we are now. There's Skagit historical. Here we are with a degraded habitat. Actually, this isn't too bad for Skagit either. I think the analysis we've done is if you want to look at MSY for the Skagit, it's somewhere around 10,000 probably, which is pretty well matches up with this red line. But that doesn't make a lot of sense to manage a Skagit for MSY now. We're trying to keep it out of the extinction area because we got this going on.
So, as a follow-up, Jim, what are you and the director going to do to reduce our northern impacts to the Examine Commission? Just a fair question.
Sure. I could let the director answer that one, or I could take a run at it.
I'm going to be there watching carefully.
Let me take at least a minute. Take 1 minute to kind of give you that. Perspective. So the kind of thinking ahead, the Chinook chapter expires at the end of 2018. So we want to have everything in place then. Our schedule calls for us to pass a U.S. position to Canada by no later than January 1st of 2017. So we got 6 months or so to get the U.S. section together. So the next U.S. Commissioners meeting is in August, and we've begun to give Alaska our concerns about the status of Puget Sound stocks and coastal Chinook stocks. We're going to come to that August meeting with Alaska with detailed proposals of the reductions that we think are necessary to achieve or to ensure that we meet the ESA standards for protection of Puget Sound Chinook. So that's kind of the path forward in terms of process, and in terms of actual specifics, what we'll be doing is that risk analysis for Puget Sound Chinook. And the picture isn't as bright as it was almost 20 years ago now when we first began to develop that the what we call the rebuilding exploitation rates. So that's the task we have in front of us.
Okay, so a 30-second follow-up. Right now, if I remember, I think I do, that 55% of Skagit Chinook summer falls are intercepted in the north, Alaska and BC. Do we have a target for the new chapter? Is it some percentage less than that, or how are we going to work that?
It will be some percentage less. I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay. I mean, in all fairness, you haven't drilled down on that yet?
We've done some preliminary analysis. For the benefit of my Canadian friends that are listening, I'll set that aside for now.
Fair enough. Thank you. Appreciate the presentation.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Just a quickie, Jim. On slide number 13, you talk about management evolution, and you include diversity and spatial structure. Under spatial structure, would it include such things as run timing?
I would include that under diversity.
Do we manage for that type of detail?
We do. I would say that our quantitative quantitative ability to manage for diversity is at a lower level of evolution than our abundance. You know, we've been doing abundance for 50 years. We can do spawner counts. We have recently begun to recognize that diversity is important and have taken a more qualitative approach to how to address that.
Charlie's been like it.
Okay, where does sex ratio fall in?
It could be several places. It could be diversity. It could also be in that stock-recruit relationship. If you're changing your sex ratio, in fact, that stock recruitment relationship will change. And so you got to be thoughtful about that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Question, real quick. Under that issue of diversity, is managing by watershed now a consideration rather than a specific stream or river, accounting for stray rates, which is a diversity factor?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. In the good old days, as we all know, a fish was a fish. You got a spawner in there, she's great.
Yeah.
Not the case anymore.
Yeah, put it in this river, it comes back.
I think it's
no.
Like that. Yeah, you're always going to get some checks, you know, winter.
Going back to NOAA's declaration of we're in a state of overfishing and the process of overfishing, Willapa Wild Chinook. Does that help us get leverage over Alaska? Because I think the interception rate is
mostly
something like 80% for the Willapa Chinook. So doesn't that give us leverage to rein in Alaska?
It gives us some. You know, they're gonna ask the question of how long have you been managing Willapa for natural production? What is the incidence of hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds? How adapted to the local environment are the fish? So there, you know, there's nothing surprising, you know, about where the different parties will come from. But there are the policy does give us the rather significant changes we've made during the last year gives us a lot more leverage than we ever would have had in the past. Willapa in the past would have been totally forgotten.
Okay. Yeah.
I had the questionable pleasure of chatting with one of the Alaska delegation, and I was told, in no uncertain terms, if they don't take the fish, they're just going to die anyway. So.